Brian Hayes at home, Gord Miller in studio.
I just want to say, Brian, that you know that I'm a rational person, right? They call me rational man around here. I'm not superstitious. I don't believe in karma, jinxes, superstitions, any of that stuff. However, that said, there is something to this whole business of you being away and stuff happening.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Like, seriously. So we were in for you Thursday, Friday. We got a Kyle Dubas interview. We had the NFL announcing that the players wouldn't get paid if their games were canceled due to COVID outbreaks. We had the Cleveland baseball team changing their name, and Zach Hyman, the news that he wouldn't be back in Toronto. That was
right.
In 2 days. So really, Brian, like, I am willing to take my rational man hat off and acknowledge that there is some ripple in the universe that happens.
There's a jinx, man. There's a jinx. It's like a voodoo. I have a voodoo on me from the radio TV gods, like the sports content gods. They have a serious hate on me, and I don't know why. I treat them very well.
What did you do?
I don't know. I'm very respectful. I give my takes, and I go home. I mean, I don't think I do anything that's out of line.
Maybe when Marconi invented the first radio, you did something in a previous life.
Like,
maybe
it could
you
be.
You did some show when radio first started and offended
Marconi, the radio god.
Yeah, yes.
That must be it, because I will say Thursday and Friday had nothing on the original. Like, I was away. I called in sick, which is so soft, and like, now it's natural. Now I don't even know what sick is going to look like when we get back into the studio and back into the office post-COVID. I'm sure the rules and regulations will be very different and a lot more strict. But I remember waking up. It was, you know, mid to late June, and I was like, I don't know. I'm not feeling it. I don't know if I can make it in. That was the day Subban for Weber, Taylor Hall for Larson, and Stamkos back to Tampa over the course of 35 minutes right before the show. It was like from 3:02 to like 3:37, all hell broke loose. And I think Mark Rowe was in there to bask in that glory. Might have been Scotty Mack, actually, back then.
Yeah,
Scotty might have been doing it.
And did you miss – were you away for Kawhi, too?
I was away when he signed with the Clippers. Yes, I was off for that one.
Raptors got him?
I think I might have been away for that, too, because it would have been into the summer. Yeah, I was likely away.
I think I was in that day.
Chances are I was away. If something significant happened, Gord, there's a very good chance I was away. But I'm back for this news that is very personal. Aaron Rodgers is coming back, Gord,
and that matters. All the stuff that we talk, all the stuff that happened on the weekend, everything that happened on the weekend, you want to focus on Aaron
Rodgers.
This
is what matters. Okay. This is what matters, because
is it done?
It is being worked out right now. Adam Schefter essentially is saying it's over, that they are reworking his contract to basically void the 2023 season. So he will have this upcoming season and the next season still on his deal. The 2023 year is basically gone. Rodgers, I don't know what he's given up. I don't know what the team has given up. The details will come out. But what you need to know is Aaron Rodgers will be there for day one of camp. You and I, we had this conversation last week. I've been beating this drum for weeks, if not months. We will know if this guy's playing based on day one of camp. If you're the quarterback of the team, you have to be there if you're playing. There's no point in dragging this into week three, week four of camp if you're eventually going to show up. So he's going to show up. He's going to have the 2023 season voided from his contract. But that means he could possibly be back again in 2022. The Packers are willing to review the situation, which I'm sure Rodgers is going to love. But this was all about the long play to make sure that he eventually could get out of Green Bay. He wants out of Green Bay. I guess Devontae Adams, his number one target, wants out of Green Bay, or could as well. But they're coming back for at least one more dance. The last dance in Green Bay. And I'm pretty jacked up about that. So with everything I missed, everything going on in the world,
I'm happy.
Aaron Rodgers will be there.
I'm happy you're happy.
Thank you, Gord.
I'm very happy for you that you're happy.
Well, that should be your priority.
Let's not talk about the New York Giants, who are kind of my NFL team. Let's not discuss.
I don't like where they're at right now.
I don't think they like where they're at.
No, but their division, I don't think much of. I mean, I don't think anyone got drastically better. I think Washington could be the best team.
I'm sorry,
in that division.
And the Packers play. Oh, just checking.
Yeah. No, they're in the North. It's not a stacked division either, but it doesn't matter. They own the North. They're the kings of the North.
It's not stacked. It's flat as a plate.
It has been very flat, but that's not their issue. Everyone's chasing Green Bay, and they will continue to chase them because Aaron Rodgers is back. Now, we'll see. Is he poisonous in the room? Is he going to be a guy
I can't picture. I've met the man in passing once, but just based on his public persona, the man hosted Jeopardy. Like,
what does that have to do with the locker room?
Only good people host Jeopardy.
He did a pretty good job.
Alex Trebek's like the greatest guy ever, and he hosted Jeopardy. So
okay. Well, I thought he did a pretty good job with Jeopardy. There was a lot of reaching over the last 4 or 5 months trying to link the Jeopardy pursuit with why he would want out of Green Bay, which was always an outrageous take that should lead to a jinx. Anyone that had that take should have the Marconi radio god after them.
Okay, but just to establish, Brian, to be clear, that there may be some sort of hex, curse, jinx on you, but I still don't believe in hexes, curses, jinxes, or superstitions.
Okay, right? only
on
me.
You. So
only
you me. Are the outlier here. You have some sort of bad karma, juju, whatever you want to call it, that has led to your misfortune. To the point where if I was Jeff McDonald, who's like the program director here, and thank God I'm not for so many reasons, but I would actually, if this station was dying for content, I would tell you, hey, you know what? Just call in sick today. Like, just
I was
take
just
day
about
off.
To say that, Gore, that you, I'm looking at it from the other side. I am a beacon of hope for everyone else. If I'm not around...
You're a content generator.
I'm a content generator. Yeah. By me not being around, it's showing up. It's going to be on your plate. You're going to have things cooking. So, and that's exactly what happened
Can you still be the captain, though? Can you still be the captain?
I think so. Shapiro said it. That's all that matters. I got Shapiro. I got Tavares. I've had a bunch of people in the sporting world.
Yeah, I guess you are, but it seems like the captain doesn't show up for the big moments.
Oh, I disagree. I think the captain supplies. I mean, that's the whole point. I am willing to sacrifice. I'm willing to grind through shows.
You're blocking shots. You're taking the lousy shows.
Exactly. I'm taking the ones that you really got to dig deep for, like Rodgers, Jeopardy, Green Bay. Like those, I was
because
doing those shows.
Because that's what listeners on Toronto radio want to hear right now. They want to hear about Green Bay's quarterbacking situation in July.
How many bigger stories are there in sports than this Aaron Rodgers saga? And that's what it's
100.
I disagree.
For listeners in Toronto, 100.
No, totally disagree. This is a massive NFL town. Massive
it is,
NFL town.
But it's July.
Yeah, camps are opening up. Like, teams are in camp. It's go time. But you get into July, it's football season now.
There's the Olympics. There was the NHL draft on the weekend.
The Olympics are very difficult to track. But I'm glad you brought it up because I think this happens every 2 years, and specifically 4 years with the summer games, where I go through the exact same process. 2 weeks before the games, I'm not even thinking about the games. I'm not familiar with who's playing when, what the schedule is, who I'm going to become attracted to in terms of their story, like what's going to drag me in. And then they get here, and I'm in, right? Like I'm watching handball. I'm watching different swimming events. And Maggie McNeil is now officially on my radar. It's like, okay, let's see. What's up, Maggie? Like we're watching. We're tracking. And I'm happy that that's the case. And I think I'm probably a microcosm of a lot of different Canadians. Mm-hmm. Well, likely, I hope yourself. Where, there was a black cloud over the games, the COVID games, it's always politicized. There's always a lot of depth that comes with it, which I understand.
And now there's a typhoon coming.
Again, the last thing anyone needs right now is to deal with a natural disaster on top of everything else. But when the games started, and they have started, it's about the athletes, it's about the stories, and you get a chance to just step back and say, hey, there's a Canadian that's doing great things. So, and I love it.
So here's the interesting part of that is that, and I'll declare my bias, having worked for them at the Olympics before at NBC, is a lot of people complain about how NBC holds stuff during the day and runs it in prime time, right? They hold stuff back. Now, they've done the same thing with swimming that they did in Beijing, where they're actually swimming the finals in the morning. So the prelims are at night in Tokyo. The finals are in the morning, so they can be in prime time. But they hold it back. And the ratings they get for it are phenomenal.
Of course.
Because what they do is, here's Brian Hayes. He's a forklift driver from upstate Michigan who's also a shot putter. And they tell you his story, then they show you his event. Mm-hmm. And that storytelling, because these are, to your point, these are, especially in the Summer Olympics, let's be honest, Brian. If you held a track and field meet in Toronto, with the same athletes that are going to be there next week, like DeGrasse, all of them, how many people would go?
Well, we had the Pan Am Games here 6 years ago, and I was actually surprised by how many people jumped on that bandwagon when it actually happened. Because remember the pessimism, Gord.
Well, they had to pay. Now, they had to pay. Remember what came out afterwards.
Yeah, but that's irrelevant to
the province
had
to buy a lot of those tickets.
Okay, maybe, but that's the point being is there was a lot of pessimism driven by a guy like me, who I was like, I have no interest, I have no time for it, and then all of a sudden, the amount of, now this is all anecdotal, but the amount of people I was talking to that were like, we were there, we went down and we watched the track and field, we watched the swim, you know, whatever it might be, it wasn't as big as the Olympics, for sure, but I think another thing that people lose track of, myself included, because I am so involved in it, is you just assume everyone's on Twitter all day, and you know, everyone's following everything, and they're not.
No, most,
you know,
people. Most. I mean, one of my favorite lines from a buddy of mine, Brian, was the trade deadline happened 1 year, and he said, "Hey, so what were the big deals today?" I said, "Oh, you didn't watch it." And he said, "You know, Gord, at my office, they don't really encourage us to sit around watching TV all day."
Exactly. There's a perfect example on Wednesday. We're like, "Hey, you didn't know that this guy signed in Minnesota." It's like, even if I was watching, I wouldn't pay attention to that point.
Yeah.
But you know, it's so irrelevant.
I do. One of the unfortunate things, Brian, about this is that we don't pay more attention to these athletes in non-Olympic years.
But that's human life. That's just human nature.
It is. Because you know what? To be honest, I mean, I remember after Katrina LeMay-Doan won 2 Olympic gold medals in Salt Lake City, a month later, the same 2 distances against the same field of athletes, like 100 people went in Calgary.
Right. And it happens all the time.
It is too bad because these are sports. Now, the Winter Olympics are a little different. Hockey obviously is, the Winter Olympics are a hockey tournament, you know, primarily, really. I mean, it drives most of the revenue, it drives most of the attendance. Then you got figure skating. Those are sports that sell lots of tickets in North America and around the world, to be sure. But a lot of Olympic sports, now, track and field's very big in Europe, no question. Track and field in Europe is, they fill big stadiums for it. But it's a really interesting dynamic, and I think the storytelling aspect of it is really important, and we talk about it all the time at this network about the importance of telling stories. It's what we do at the World Junior every year. We take 22 players that, for the most part, people don't know much about, tell their stories, they get interested, and they watch.
Yeah, I think there's always some outliers. There's always a few kids that elevate beyond, you know, the rest of the team. In other words, you know, a few players that have a big semifinal or a big final or whatever, and their stories are going to continue to carry over. But it's not possible for a lot of people. No one's going to completely rejig their viewing, you know, ways of life to start following some kid who plays for Prince George because he saw him at the World Juniors and he loved his story, you know, or start following them at college or, you know, whatever it might be. And it's the same thing with the Olympic athletes. You know, you do your 2-week thing and hopefully your names stick. Like Penny Oleksiak is now a Canadian that everyone of a certain age is going to remember forever because of what she did 4 years ago or 5 years ago and what she hopefully will continue to do in Japan. Maybe Maggie McNeil is the second coming of Penny Oleksiak, someone who was not, you know, well known to the average person in this country and is going to do some serious damage at the Tokyo Games. Her story is going to be everywhere. She's going to come home. She will be a marketing darling, I'm sure. And then her name all of a sudden resonates, and it's a household name. But that's, you know, an impossibility for that to apply to every athlete who happens to be over there.
Yeah.
And you're just, you know, there's too much going on in the North American sports scene with hockey, football, baseball, basketball, golf, tennis. You know, to follow a shot putter, it's just not going to happen. You know, like it's, and I don't think it's reasonable to expect people to continue to follow the story. But during the storm, the 2-week storm, even the 2 weeks before, 2 weeks of, maybe 2 weeks after, boom, capture it. And hopefully these athletes get their moments. Hopefully they come home and they have the ability to make some money off of it as well.
Because a lot of them don't.
A lot of them don't. Yeah.
Even the really successful ones. By the way, a little aside, is there anything more golf than the fact that Bryson DeChambeau has to drop out, but they plug in Patrick Reed?
I love it. Captain America making his way over there and
making friends wherever he goes.
Found it here in the woods. I actually have a pretty good lie. I can get out of here.
Look, my ball landed on a tee.
Yeah,
what are the odds of that?
Perfect for me. I can play this. I got a shot. He's coming, Patrick Reed. How about John Rahm testing positive for the second time in a month and a half, yet in between there he wins a U.S. Open,
yeah,
finishes top 10 at the British, top 10 at the Scottish Open.
Yeah.
Like, what is the backstory here? Something doesn't add up how he's still testing positive for COVID, and he's fully vaccinated now.
Can I just say, and I'm a, you know, I'm a passing golf fan. I didn't know until very recently that he's Spanish.
Well, now you know. Now you know. It's Spain.
I don't know how that happened, but all of a sudden I read, you know, Spanish golfer John Rahm. Like, what? Mm. It was like a month ago.
Well, he's been over here forever. He still lives here.
Yeah.
I think he went to Arizona State. Yeah. Ian Mickelson are close. He's got great interview. Like, he's one of the best talkers on tour, man. He gives you a great, you know, thought-provoking answers. But anyway, the Olympics, I'm glad they're here. I was not waiting for them, admittedly. I wasn't like, I can't wait. And I was a little bit concerned that maybe my passion for the games wouldn't arrive. But it's like clockwork, man. Every 2 years, every 4 years, they do. And you find new names and find new stories that you weren't expecting. And
that's great.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I love that it's officially here. So the Jays are in Fenway for four. We're going to catch up with Pete Abraham in about 10 minutes. We'll start teeing that up. Get his take on his view of the Jays. The Sox just took three or four against the Yankees, stole a couple of games off them. So the Jays are 9.5 back.
Yeah, so here's some math for you on the Jays. Okay? So right now, Oakland has the last wild card spot, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're on pace for 90 wins. So either Oakland or whoever catches them is going to get 90 wins. The Jays have 67 games left. They got to go 41-26 to get to 90 wins. That's 6-12 winning percentage. No one in the American League currently has a 6-12 winning percentage.
So you're telling me they have a chance, or that it's highly unlikely?
I'm saying the probability of them making the postseason
is low.
Is low.
Yep. That's been a reality now.
Wouldn't you agree?
For a little while.
Like,
yes.
Because you sit there and look, they're only this many games back of the wild card. But the truth is, there's other teams in the chase.
Mm-hmm.
If the target's 90 wins, 90 wins is going to be a big ask.
They got to catch a heater like they did in 15, like Washington did a couple of years ago. It's very unlikely, absolutely. But I'm not selling. Like, I know that has become – that's getting some more noise in the city and throughout the baseball world, the idea that maybe you put Simeon on the market, maybe Ray if you don't think you can re-sign him. I don't think they can even entertain that idea. They've been selling for years.
Yeah.
It's you want, especially coming home. You know, it's deeper than your farm system. It's deeper than planning for wins in the future. There is a marketing component that comes with this. They're at home on Friday night, and they want that to be a celebration. It should be a celebration. You can't have a celebration if literally when you're taking the field, they're making deals and guys are walking and you're putting up the white flag and you're saying we're done for the season. I don't think they're going to buy at the level I was maybe expecting they would or thought they could 2 or 3 weeks ago. But I think they still have to lean towards patchwork, you know, buys. Maybe you pick up an arm or two out of the bullpen just to prove to your guys we're not punting on the season. But you absolutely cannot sell. To me, it's not even something you can entertain if you're Shapiro and Atkins.
Well, we'll know, won't we? After this four-game series against Boston, we'll know, right? We'll have a much better idea.
The numbers you just put forth, though, Gord, we know about the division. Like, they're 9.5 back of Boston. They're 8.5 back of the Rays. The Yankees are choking away games. The Yankees have a half-game lead on them in the division. Like, the Yankees, they have a vibe in New York as if they're on pace for 45 wins. And they're four game. They got a half game lead on the Jays.
It's the way they lose, right? Like, they blow a 4-0 lead in the eighth against Boston and all that. So I mean,
but still, the point being is they're having a season that they're not enjoying. Everyone hates Boone. Everyone hates Cashman, and they're a half game up on the Jays.
Right.
So the division is more or less gone. It is a wild card pursuit at this point, and the math just doesn't do them any favors. You know, the math you just pointed out, I think, is 100% relevant, accurate. The context is important. Shapiro and Atkins know it. The team likely knows it. But even if it's symbolic in nature, pick something up and say, boys, we're not punting on a season here. So I think they're going to continue to move towards that line of thinking come the trade deadline, and we're getting closer and closer to that. So we'll continue to talk about the Jays, them dropping 2 of 3 in New York. They're in Fenway for 4, and then back home on Friday night against Kansas City. You mentioned Zach Hyman, and I missed out on that conversation, but this felt like it was a foregone conclusion for quite some time, didn't it, Gord, that he was leaving?
Yes.
And he was probably going to Edmonton?
Yeah.
At least a week or so, there's been so much smoke.
Yeah,
I felt like the fire was going to get started.
I guess I held out the idea that maybe he could shop the offer back to Toronto this week and see what was there. But if it's what we're hearing, you know, 7 years, 5.5 a year, so you're looking at $38.5 million, even over 8 years. $35.5 million for the Leafs is probably too much to digest, considering you've talked about they need a goaltender, they need, you know, a couple of forwards at least. So now the problem is they've got to dip into the free agent market for a goalie, a defenseman to replace Bogosian, who won't be back, and now to replace Hyman and fill out the rest of the roster. So,
yeah,
and
it's not ideal.
They've got about $9.5 million in cap space, so it gets tight in a hurry, depending on who that goaltender is. Like, there's only two goalies on the free agent market who have played more than 30 games last year. So, you know what I mean? Like, Grubauer and Elliott are the only goalies who appeared in more than 30 games last year.
Right, and Grubauer's not coming here. And if he were, they'd have to pay him a fair amount of money that they're, I don't think, comfortable paying.
Yeah.
You know, Mrazek would have been close, I guess. He had some injury issues. Freddie would have been close. Like, they projected to start 30-plus, but they didn't get there. The Leafs, I think they made the right play here. I love Zach Hyman as a player. I love him as a person. Yeah. He's been great to us on the show. We've had him in studio a bunch. He's always willing to come on. We will have him on again shortly, I'm sure. I wish him nothing but success in Edmonton. You can't go 7 years at 5.5. You can't. I think it's an overpayment even in Edmonton. I think they know it. I think Ken Holland is just scrambling here. I don't know if he's trying to please McDavid or the owner more. It's probably a combination of both. And Hyman will help them a lot. I mean, he plays on a line with McDavid and or Draisaitl. That is a grand slam. We know exactly what he's going to bring. He's been doing it here for five or six years with Matthews and Tavares. But he's 29. He'll be 30. He's had some knee injuries. I don't picture this being something that will age well. And at some point, the Leafs had to put the stake in the ground and stop giving in to every contract demand. And Hyman is where it stopped, you know, for the most part. I'm sure we could find other examples, but ideally you build a cap team that doesn't overpay anyone. But that's not generally a reality. If you're going to overpay, the Leafs have made the philosophical decision, which is one that I agree with, it's going to be our best players. They overpaid drastically for Mitch Marner. Cale Makar's deal, again, makes Marner's deal look awful. Terrible. Anytime a kid like that gets a deal like that, Mitch Marner making almost $2 million more than Cale Makar should be illegal in this
league. Okay,
but it's not.
But
cap related, it's flat.
No,
I get it.
But there's more to it than that.
What is more to it than that?
Because Tavares set the bar. And when Tavares set the bar, Matthews wasn't taking a nickel less than 11. And when Matthews gets his 11, Marner, who has numbers equivalent to Matthews, isn't taking much less than that.
That's fine, Gord, but it's just a fact. Across the board, other comparisons in the league, Cale Makar is as good, if not better, than Marner, and he's making $2 million less.
Yeah,
right?
100%.
And Rantanen is as good, making $2 million less. So, yes, within the team context, I understand that. It still doesn't mean they had to do anything. You know, everything, yeah, you had to do this. No, you didn't. You didn't have to do anything. It's your team. They made the decision to. The point I'm getting to here with Hyman is, though, at some point you had to say, we can't go there, and I think they made the right decision. They couldn't go there. It's disappointing. They'll miss him. And I think for his legacy in Toronto, it's actually a good thing because his contract never came up, and it now never will in relation to the Maple Leafs.
Fair enough, yeah.
We'll get more into this later in the hour. We'll talk about the draft and what went down on Friday night. Overdrive continues. Gord Miller's in here. I'm Brian Hayes. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Sounds like Valanciunas is on his way to New Orleans. So Jonas Valanciunas is on his way from Memphis to New Orleans to team up with Zion Williamson.
Oof.
More details in that trade, but we'll try to catch that when we can and bring it up later in the afternoon. But there's a lot going on. A lot going on in the NBA. The draft is coming up on Thursday. The Raptors will be on the clock at 4. And still no news on Masai. No news on Kyle Lowry. A lot going on in the NBA world.
Well, you take the day off and it'll all be settled.
I will.
You
I
take
will.
The day off and everything will happen.
Just a matter of time. And the Jays are at Fenway, taking on the Sox for 4 starting tonight. They dropped 2 of 3 down in New York against the Mets. Red Sox take 3 of 4 off the Yankees. The Jays are now 9.5 back at Boston. Chris Sale is on his way back as well. Here is Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe, and he joins us here on Overdrive. How you doing, Pete?
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're doing very well. What is the plan here with Chris Sale? I know he's making some rehab starts, but at what point do you expect him back? And when that happens, I mean, how is that going to affect a staff that I think has overperformed this year and has been remarkably healthy for Boston?
Yeah, well, the Red Sox are being super careful with him. Alex Cora said today that he's going to have 2 more rehabs before they bring him back to the big leagues. And so that puts him somewhere in the first week of August, maybe. And they basically treated it like a spring training. You know, all of the steps, live batting practice and the fielding practice, and then, you know, 1 inning, 2 innings, 3 innings. They're building it up like it's been a normal spring training. And I guess that makes sense given that he hasn't pitched in 2 years. And as they've said, you know, no team can really add a Chris Sale at the trade deadline. So it's going to be a big pickup for them. And I don't know where they go in terms of replacing, you know, who he replaces in the rotation. They've had Garrett Richards has struggled a bit. Martin Perez has struggled a bit. And they also want to control the innings of some of their guys in preparation for the postseason. And, you know, whether that's kind of a modified six-man rotation or taking somebody and putting them in the bullpen for a while or piggybacking starters, there's a few different things they could do, and they're trying to sort that out now.
Well, they definitely know where they're going. You mentioned it, the playoffs. Unless there's some, you know, epic collapse, they're just going to probably cruise to it. They'll be fighting for the division for sure, but at a minimum, the wild card. And when you talk about the Jays, which is what we do daily up here, Pete, there was some hope at different times that maybe the division was still worthy of a pursuit. I think it's over now. They're 9.5 back of the Sox, 9 back of Tampa. Likely not going to happen. Big 4 games at Fenway starting tonight. But there is a debate here in this town whether or not they should buy, sell, stand pat. I am adamant they either buy or stand pat. I don't think they can sell. I don't think they can send that message. Furthermore, they're coming back to Toronto, so they're trying to sell tickets again for the first time in almost 2 years. But the division's likely gone. The wild card's going to be tough for them to catch. But where would you stand on that? As an outsider looking in, how would you map out the Blue Jays' plan between now and the trade deadline?
Well, I think you're right. I don't see how they could sell. I mean, you're coming back to the Rogers Center for the first time in, 800 days or something? I mean, it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. And they've got, you know, I think a good young team, a team that's on the rise, and you don't want to sort of say, okay, now we're going to start over again by selling guys. And, you know, Toronto, to me, is a very strange team because you look at the run differential, it's the second best in the division. It's better than the Red Sox by a lot. And yet they're in fourth place, and they're only 3 games over .500. You know, to me, I'm not saying that they're going to make a charge and win a division, but they've sort of the record doesn't indicate to me how good they are. And they score a lot of runs. The pitching obviously needs help. But I don't know. To me, they feel like a dangerous team still. And maybe, you know, it's a stretch maybe for them to make the playoffs. But I can see them getting hot at some point and making a run. I have a lot of respect for that lineup, and I have a lot of respect for Charlie Montoya.
Hey, curious about, you know, the Red Sox have been described a lot of ways in the last 15 years, but plucky underdogs has not been one of them for most of it. And here they are, a team surprising a lot of people in baseball this year. And then on the weekend, they erase a 4-0 deficit in the 8th inning and beat their arch rivals, the Yankees. How captivated is the city of Boston by this Red Sox team that wasn't expected to do this?
Yeah, I mean, very much so. And it's been strange in the beginning because Fenway Park wasn't at full capacity, so we never really had a chance to maybe fully grasp how much the fans were behind them. But once they flipped that switch and they allowed full capacity, they've had big crowds every night. And, you know, I think people, you know, this team is not necessarily built around any one superstar. They've got a couple of young guys with, you know, Rafi Devers and Kike Hernandez and different players kind of doing different things. It's not like it's a one-man team. And after trading Mookie Betts and Alex Cora is here, then Alex Cora is gone, and Alex Cora is back, there was so much going on over a short period of time. I think most people thought, like, well, if they can at least be .500, that would be good, you know, given everything that's happened. And when they lost the first three games of the season to Baltimore, it was like, holy smoke, you know, this is going to be even worse than we thought. But then they won nine in a row, and it's been, you know, they've been at that level ever since. And to me, it, you know, the pitching, I didn't think was the rotation was all that good in the beginning of the season. And those guys have definitely overachieved, which is why it's important to get Sale back and perhaps even add somebody at the trade deadline to kind of bolster that group.
We're chatting with Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe. The Jays are at Fenway. We're taking on the Red Sox for four before they come home officially to Toronto on Friday night. Thomas Hatch will make his first start of the season tonight. The MVP debate has been ongoing here for a while. It feels like it's a two-man show in the American League, whether it's Shohei Ohtani or Vladdy Jr. I would think Ohtani is a prohibitive favorite at this point. Who would get your vote if it were tonight, and why?
Well, it's tough to ignore what Ohtani has done because it's not a gimmick. He's pitching well, and he's pitching every 5 days. He doesn't take too many days off. And I saw him. I was out at the All-Star game, and I was astonished just at how easy it all seemed to come for him. You know, goes in the home run derby, and the next day, you know, pitches a scoreless inning and gets to the plate. And, you know, everything seems to be, you know, it's such an interesting season from an historical standpoint. So if you had an MVP vote, how do you ignore a guy like that? But at the same time, what Vladdy Jr. is doing and the way he's turned his career around, you know, with the physical change and just his approach at the plate is so good. It's so much different than his father, which I think is kind of interesting. To me, he's the most dangerous hitter in the league right now. And if the Jays, you know, neither of those teams really are in playoff position right now. But if the Jays were to make any kind of run, I think that would give people some pause, especially if Vladdy's in the middle of it.
Well, we'll see what happens starting tonight. I mean, these are four big games for the Jays, clearly, for them to remain in contention, to come home with some sort of positive vibes. But the Sox are rolling, and I'm sure the plan is to make sure that they come home on the opposite side of positive. We'll find out. Enjoy it. Always great to catch up with you. Thank you, Pete.
Thank you, guys.
There's Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe. Again, the Jays taking on the Sox tonight down at Fenway.
What are the Sox, 7-4 against the Jays this year? I think I saw that.
I'm not. That sounds about right. I mean, the Jays, remember, they rolled into Fenway earlier in the year and spanked them.
Yeah.
But it has been the opposite of that, where Boston rolled through and took two of – well, they only played two. One got rained out. They took both of them down in Buffalo last week. So, yeah, that sounds about right. And, you know, the Jays are – they're in a tough spot. Thomas Hatch making a debut tonight. You got Alec Manoah still on the IL. And you gotta get at least two down at Fenway.
Minimum, right?
At least two.
Minimum.
Minimum two. And forget even the division. Like, we're talking the wild card here based on the numbers that you put it out that you pointed out, Gord. If they want to play anywhere close to 600 baseball, which they probably have to do, you can't go into Fenway and drop three or four, get swept. Can't happen. You gotta at least take two of two on the road and then come home and see where you're at when you're back in Toronto on Friday night. And so I think the anticipation for that will build as the week goes on as well.
Sorry, but so when you watch the games against the Mets on the weekend, do you see teams that are close? Or, like, what did you see? I mean, obviously the Jays
had
that
bullpen pitchers again. I mean, it's the same issues. Like, look at Barnes, who New York knows very, very well. Baruchy, it's the same issue. It's arms and defense. Generally speaking, it's been bullpen defense that has really caused this team a lot of problems, and they're still three games over 500. Abraham just mentioned the run differential. They're plus 86 on the season. The offense is there. The bats are there. The rotation has not been anywhere as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's been mediocre. You know, it's been fine league-wide in terms of their comparables. It's too many, you know, shot ourselves in the foot moments where it's a blow-up inning here or there, and a game gets away from them that it shouldn't. And that's why you're in the position you're in. So it's bullpen defense, and I don't know how much of that addressed between now and the deadline, how much of it you can expect to just grow internally. Like, maybe if Pearson comes up and is ready to pitch and gives you some quality innings out of the bullpen, that could be an option. You know, maybe Hatch is up here when Manoah comes back. Hatch moves into the bullpen. That could be an option, give you a little bit more flexibility for Montoya and company. But it's not they're not playing anywhere close to a championship level. This is not 2015 2.0 where they're this close and they just need a couple of tweaks, albeit big names, Price, Tulowitzki, et cetera, that just shoots them off like a rocket. I do not see that in their future. but it's been fairly consistent with what the issues have been.
And you talked about the MVP debate, and we've talked about this before, that Vladdy is having one of the best seasons in Blue Jay history. Like, you talk about George Bell's MVP year in 85, I think it was, you know, I mean, all those things. And here he comes along, and a guy's having one of the greatest seasons in the last century in Major League Baseball.
And Shohei Ohtani. Yeah, it's someone's going to one-up you.
Well, one-up you. I mean, this is like being in the same, you know, in the same division as Edmonton and Calgary for Winnipeg years ago. I mean, you got the third best team in the league, but the two ones better than you are in the same division. Like, I mean, Ohtani's year is just stunning.
Well, it's a unicorn season as well, which, like, Vladdy can't start pitching down the stretch.
Right. Like, although
that would be great. You know, maybe give him a shot. Maybe he's got an arm. I don't know. But, like, you can't fight with that. Like, you can't argue with it. You can't match it. You're like, what do you want me to do, man? This guy's got, like, a 350 ERA. Like, I can't compete with that. It really has just been a spectacle for Ohtani. And I would think that he is a heavy favorite as it currently stands, and I can't imagine anything will change. But Vladdy can be very proud of his season so far. We'll see what he's got as he comes home and as the season continues to roll on. Our buddy Noodles is going to join us. Jamie Noodles McLennan in about 25 minutes.
We know he's not at the cottage.
No, he's not. He's not a fan of being outdoors.
He's not a cottage. He is a bat. For those who don't know, he's an indoor darkness. Like, the sun is not Jamie's friend.
No, he doesn't like water, the sun, bugs. He's miserable. So the cottage, I got married.
So the cottage would be, you know.
Cottage is not his area of expertise. I got married outdoors, kind of like a resort type of wedding. And Noodles was there, and he put his best face on. I think he hated it with a passion.
Yeah, he's
miserable.
I love working with Jamie. He's a great guy. Eating with Jamie can be a challenge.
Not the most eclectic palate, if that's what you're driving at, Gord.
I'm going to say that there are five-year-olds who have more varied food tastes than our friend Jamie.
Very basic.
Literally, he wants a burger with bun and burger. Mm-hmm. That's what he wants in his burger.
Yeah, he's not straying. No, he's not. And he's not interested in trying things. That's when you know that you... I mean, it's a difficult conversation to ask an adult to try something, you know? Like, it's one thing with your kids, but I want to have that conversation sometimes with Noodles. I'm like, why don't you try this type of food that we're going to order? You want to give it a shot, buddy? It's so patronizing. I'm talking down to him. Let me offer you something I think you're going to like.
We did a game in Boston one day, and it was an afternoon game. We could fly out that night. So we drove from the rink to the airport. The flight was at like 8 o'clock or something. I'm hungry, so the only place open was a seafood place at Logan Airport. The only place open.
That's a pass.
So we got a problem because I'm going to eat, and he's got to eat. So right away, the place is going to smell like fish. Well, it is a seafood place, so my food's going to taste like fish. Mm-hmm. So we go in, we sit down, I order something or other, and he orders his burger. They have a burger on the menu, and right away it comes, it tastes like fish. Mm-hmm. I'm guarantee you, your burger does not taste like fish. 100%. No, my burger tastes like fish.
You can't fight it. He's one of a kind, and we will catch up with Noodles, get his take on a lot of different topics coming out of the NHL over the course of the weekend. We will continue to hit on it all. Gord Miller's in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Jamie Noodles McLennan in about 15 minutes. Get his take on the Zach Hyman deal. We'll get back into that at 5. Seth Jones on his way to Chicago. Mm-hmm. We're waiting on Jack Eichel. It feels like it's just a matter of time before he goes somewhere. Sam Reinhart flipped to Florida. Sam Bennett gets an extension with Florida. Ristolainen out of Buffalo on his way to Philly. So Buffalo, man, they're deciding we got to cut some dead weight here. You know, talent, lots of talent, but clearly they're turning things over. And I'd say they're going to take a step back, but when your back's up against the wall, there's nowhere else to go. Really,
you know, them in Arizona, it's kind of, I mean, you can see Arizona dumping cash, so they're taking on salary cap hits that have lower salaries. You know what I mean? Like, guys that make their cap hits 6, but the actual salary's 2. That's happening too. So yeah, it's been
well at Vancouver, right? Yeah. Like they get Ekman Larson and Connor Garland, and basically gave up a first and dumped a lot of bad contracts.
I think Ekman Larson will be better there. I think once you get him out of the desert, out of that sort of relaxed, you know, they were contending a couple of years ago, but I think he's a good player who just needs a change of scenery.
Yeah, I agree. I'd be a little bit concerned that he will be dealing with some uncharted territory because, to your point, now, man, you're under the spotlight in Vancouver.
In a tough market.
Yeah, in a tough market where it hasn't been going so well. The guy who acquired you is not exactly beloved in Jim Benning, the GM. So, and a big ticket with lots of term.
Yeah.
So he's got to step up. He's got to do his thing. So we'll get into all that and more coming up with Noodles. The draft was effectively, was it hijacked by Montreal?
Certainly overshadowed.
Overshadowed for sure. Selecting Logan Mailloux. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Mailloux.
I've heard it five different ways. But he's a name that we're going to have to get used to and we're going to follow closely. For those of you not familiar with the story, he's an Ontario kid. He was playing with the London Knights. He didn't this past year because the OHL was not up and running. So he was in Sweden playing. And he had a consensual relationship with a woman, took a picture that she did not consent to, and he sent it to everyone on the team. It got out. It went public.
And then identified her.
And then identified her. And, you know, he had to face charges over there, I believe, and face justice in Sweden.
He was convicted, and punished.
Yep, and now he's come home, and he was still eligible for the draft. He asked every team in the league not to draft him, and yet the Habs stepped up to the podium with the 31st pick and took him.
So here's the thing. I think everyone deserves a second chance, and I think he does too. And I think since his conviction, he's done a lot of all the right things that you need to do, pretty much. He has apologized publicly. He's apologized to the victim, although, for the record, she has said that the apology didn't meet her satisfaction. But he has apologized. He has undergone counseling. He's going to speak to youth groups this season. He's going to talk to minor hockey teams about this. He asked not to be drafted. If Montreal doesn't draft him on Friday, and if the teams in the league honor his request, we're not talking about this today. The victim doesn't have this dragged back up. And this doesn't get relitigated. And I really think that this is almost all on Montreal. This is on the Canadiens. If the league really wanted to, they could have declared him ineligible for the draft. Clearly, if he'd been caught with a trunk full of drugs, if a player got caught with some sort of major trunk full of drugs or committed a crime that caused him to be imprisoned, the NHL would say, you're not eligible for the draft. So the league could have done that. But this is on Montreal. And whether he would have been picked later by someone else is irrelevant. They took him. They ignored his wishes, and they took him. And I think this is on them, to be honest. I really think this is on them. And they've obviously dragged the victim back into this, and they've put him in a very difficult position.
They have. I don't know the whole backstory of what he told the league and what he told respective teams. We know about his request not to be drafted. Now, was that, please don't draft me in the first round, where it's going to be that much more public?
His public statement was, please do not select me in this draft.
Right, of course. But, was that, I don't know. Like, was that 100% genuine, or was it, please don't put me in the first round, where it was going to, now it's exploded.
Well, he was,
if he gets drafted in the third or fourth or fifth round, is it as big of a story? Yes, it would be big. Is it as prominent? I don't know. I can't reason with Montreal taking him. I've been trying to think about it over the course of the weekend. I don't know why any team would. If he has told you, do not take me, then why put yourself in a position, why put the league in a position, why put him and, most importantly, the victim in a position where you do it? I can't reason with it. I can't figure it out. I disagree with you saying that the league is exonerated from this. It's their league.
No, I'm not saying they're exonerated.
They should be at the forefront of this almost as much as Montreal, as far as I'm concerned. If you don't want him picked, tell the teams not to take him. You run the league. You're in charge of the brand and protecting the brand. This falls on the desk of the commissioner as well, in my opinion.
I agree with you. And what I said was, I think the league should have probably declared him ineligible for the draft because they can do it. The other thing is, he wasn't rated to go in the first round, so I don't think
he wasn't.
He wouldn't have asked not to go in the first round. He likely wasn't anyway.
Right. I get the point I'm making, because it is irrelevant. He's gone, and now he's been taken. I just if it was He gets picked in the fifth round. Is it going to get the same profile as first round Montreal? If he goes fifth round to Arizona, what is the reaction? I don't know. But it happened. They took him in the first round, so it's completely irrelevant. You know, it is a moot point in the end. They took him. It was the number one night for draft prospects. It was the first round. It's as big of a spotlight as you're going to get. And Montreal made the decision to do it. And I can't reason with why they would, but I do see this through two different timelines. Before the draft pick, I can't figure out. After the pick, now you got to make sure you're honest and true about how you're going to handle this moving forward. We'll pick up on this in the next hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.